We're on the second week of our parenting series, our family series, White Picket Fences. We discovered last week that families have changed a great deal since 1960. But God has not changed, and His desire to begin the family through a husband and a wife in a relationship that where they love each other and honor each other and share that love with their children. I'm very aware that many of you come from single families. Some of you come from two parents, but they're both not seeking the same values in their lives. But if you are a parent, if you know someone who's a parent, if you've ever had a parent, you know that parenting is a hard job. It's difficult. It can be overwhelming. I remember when we brought our first son home, Corey, from the hospital, I was petrified and excited, more petrified than excited, I think. And I was really concerned. I hoped that Brenda knew more than I did. And I was really worried because I was terrified that I would break him or do something that would mess him up for the rest of his life. So I was pretty worried about that. I remember thinking, if I can just get through those diaper-changing days, life will be good. But then there's terrible twos, then there's school, and nothing prepares you for teenagers. How to pay for college, and then they finally graduate, and you think they're through. You're through. Well, that doesn't work that way. The reality is we're never really through as parents. I remember a man talking to me a number of years ago, telling me about his son, and he was real concerned, and I'm thinking that his son's in college, and his son was 54. But, you know, he was you know, that kind of a compassion and concern. But the joy that children bring to us far outweigh the sleepless nights and the anxiety and the problems that we face. And isn't it amazing that as kids we were never really aware of the anxiety and the problems that we caused our parents, those anxious moments. We had three boys in 4 years, and it was kind of crazy. At the same time, we had our third son, Brent. We were building a new church, and we fired our contractor, and I became the general contractor. And if any of you know my construction skills, that's kind of a joke. But I'm letting contracts and negotiating contracts, and I'm working, preparing sermons, going to visit folks, and I'm at the church about 40 or 50 hours a week doing construction because we were doing a lot of the work ourselves. And during this chaotic time, Brenda kind of carried the load of parenting a great deal. She would remind me of that sometimes. And I remember one day I came home and she thrust Brent into my arms. Brent was about 3 or 4 months old. And she goes, "I got to get out of here. I'm a terrible mother." You ever felt that way? You know, that, boy, what am I doing? And we laugh about it now, but it wasn't real funny then. My worship pastor used to say, "Steve, if you didn't have kids, you would have nothing to say." Because in those early years, my sermons were full of kid stories. And as I listen to my youngest son, Brent, preach now, he sounds like me 25 years ago. Because his sermons are full of kid stories. But kids do funny things, don't they? I remember I had a conversation with my administrative assistant in Whitechapel. Misty was at that point a single mom. And she had this cute little boy, blonde-headed boy named Tucker. And you know, when you're a single mom and you're trying to negotiate all the stuff you have to do, it gets a little overwhelming. And she was driving home from somewhere and her radiator blew up. And she's on the side of the road and she's trying to call and she can't get cell service. So she goes, "I'm sitting cross-legged in the grass and Tucker's there beside me. And he puts his hand on my leg and says, 'So, would you like to play I Spy with my little eye?'" You know, she goes, "It was really a good moment," because she goes, "I'd rather cry." I like parenting, and I pray that God will give you many years blessed as a parent if you are a parent today. But today I want to talk about your priority as a parent. If you're a parent or hope someday to be a parent or have an influence in a child's life outside the parenting role, children are placed in our care for a period of time. You got a few years to put a lot of stuff into their lives. They're dependent on us in so many, many ways in those younger years, right? They need care, they need love, they need support. Literally, their lives depend on us. What's the most important task that we have during those years? You might be surprised. The Bible gives us the answer to that in Deuteronomy chapter 6. Here's what it is. Remember it. A parent's priority is to gradually transfer a child's dependence away from the parents until the dependence rests solely on God. Make sure you get that. Our task as a mom and dad is to transfer dependence from us to God. As our children are small, they depend on us for everything. And we keep saying, I can't wait till they get older. But guess what? When they get older, we feel kind of bad. They don't need us anymore. You know, and we really wish they needed us again, excluding the diaper thing. I never want to have that again. But, you know, we really kind of like them needing us and having to call us and ask what to do and how to do it. But over time, our task is to transfer dependence until they no longer depend on us, but instead they depend on the one who loves them more than we do and who will be with them long after you and I are gone. We teach them to depend on God. We know that if we're in church, that's what we're supposed to do. But where does this come from and how does it happen? In Deuteronomy chapter 5, remember that Moses reveals the Ten Commandments, the ten big things that God challenges people to live by. And this is what he writes. These are my commands, decrees, and laws. The Lord your God directed me to teach you to observe in the land that you're crossing the Jordan to possess, so that you, your children, and their children, and after them may fear the Lord your God as long as you live by keeping all his decrees and commands that I give you, so that you may enjoy long life. Who's this for? It's for you. Who else is this for? It's for your children. Who else? It's for your children's children. And what's the purpose? To enjoy a long life. Not just to live a long life, but to know God's joy in your life. According to this text, God has put it in our power to change not just this generation, but the next generation and the following generation. How do we do that? How do you start to do that? Deuteronomy gives us two principles that at first seem kind of simple, but if we live them out as parents, we will incredibly impact our children's lives far beyond our time with them. And the first one's simply this: to love our God. To love our God. That phrase was used by devout Jews three times a day, in the morning and at noon, in the evening. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. The following verse says, love the Lord your God with what? How much? All your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. I heard a pastor give some insight onto that passage of all your heart. He states that when you go to get a flu shot, they actually stick you and give you a small dosage of the flu. You get that so that you won't get the real thing, the total thing. And he makes an argument that when we expose our children to a little bit of God, it does not inspire faith. Instead, it kind of makes them immune to his presence all around us. It's like watching a parade and think that we've been to the circus. You know, we've been to church. We know about church, but we haven't really experienced the power and the might of God in our lives. This series is about being real about marriage and about family, so let's get real. There's a lot of things that distract us as parents from loving God with all of our heart and all our soul and all of our might. As parents, we want what's best for our kids, right? We want our kids to have more than we had, to live a better life than we lived. So we pour ourselves into our careers, trying to make the best for our kids. But sometimes we're not giving them what they really need in life. And the only one who can give their life purpose and meaning and direction. We want to give them gymnastics and karate and football and basketball and ballet and soccer and a host of other things that turns parents into taxi drivers. Some of you have been there. We want them to live in a good school district. When they get to be 16, we want them to have a decent car that's safe. And if we're not careful, we become child-centered parents rather than God-centered parents. Our lives revolve around our children rather than our lives revolving around our first commitment to God. Some time ago, I heard T.D. Jakes, who is this large African-American preacher. I was kind of channel searching, and I saw him, and he was talking. And it's kind of funny, as you watch him, he has about three handkerchiefs. He sweats a lot. You know, he's talking, and he's wiping his brow. And he's talking to the church. And he said, some of you are asking, why aren't my children learning the Bible and growing up as believers like I did? He said, I'm going to tell you. Let me tell you. Here's why. You're too lazy to come to Sunday school and to keep them there. You don't show up at church very regularly. You don't spend time with them in personal devotions. Exactly when do you think they're going to learn to make Jesus first in all their lives? They're watching you. They're looking at you. Love the Lord with all your heart, and you can't make it to church regularly. You can't bring your kids to Wednesday night. You can't bring your kids to youth. Parents, don't kid yourselves. We're preaching a sermon every day, and it's not the words we say, it's the actions that we do. That's the sermon that our kids learn. How important is our involvement in church? How important is our faith in terms of the priority of things that I confess and what I do? Why is it so important that we do this? Because statistically, 90% of kids come to Christ before the age of 18. 90% of people who become Christ followers do that before the age of 18. There was a study done several years ago that looked at children who had grown up with active children, Christian parents in the church. When both mom and dad came to church regularly to church, 72% of their children would accept Christ and be Christ followers as adults. That should be a no-brainer for every Christian family. If it was only moms who brought the kids to church, that number drops all the way down to 15%. Think about that. If it was only dads who brought their kids to church, it jumps back up to 55%. So fathers, you have huge spiritual influence on the lives of your children. Don't ever underestimate that. If neither mom nor dad regularly came to church, and the kids just kind of found their way there, however, 6% became followers of Jesus. Parents, you're demonstrating to your children what it means to love Jesus with all your heart. The second thing that we learn in Deuteronomy 6 teaches us what seems small, but it's profound in terms of its importance. First of all, we're to love God with all of our hearts. As parents. And number two, we're to lead our families. We're to lead our families. Listen to what it says in Deuteronomy 6:6-9 in the Message. I like this paraphrase of these particular verses. Write these commands that I've given you today on your hearts. Get them inside of you, and then get them inside your children. Talk about them wherever you are, sitting at home or walking in the street. Talk about them from the time you get up in the morning to when you go to bed at night. Tie them on your hands and foreheads as a reminder. Inscribe them on the doorposts of your homes and on your city gates. The second thing may seem small, but it's just as important as the first. It's incredibly important. Number one, we love God with all of our hearts. And secondly, we lead our families. First, we get Him inside of us, and then we seek to get Jesus inside our children. The NIV says we impress it on our children, but I like what the Message says, get them inside your children. How do we do that? I have three boys, and they're all University of Kentucky basketball fans. You know how that happened? because her dad's crazy about basketball. And they knew that. Brenda was afraid that Corey was going to be brain damaged. When he was about a week old, Kentucky was playing in the regional finals, and I was kind of getting excited, and I guess I was kind of beating him a little harder than I should on his back, you know, and she was afraid there were, you know, I was going to kill him or something, you know. But the boys knew it was important to me that if there was a chance to see a game, I was going to see it or listen to it or whatever I could do to know what was going on. And they've all become that same way. How do we impress the importance on children to be totally devoted to Jesus? The same way you teach them to be totally devoted to basketball or whatever it is that you love. I remember some deep theological discussions I used to have with the boys around the table. I tried occasionally, at least once a month or so, to take one of them to breakfast and just to check in, how you doing? And then to always check in spiritually, how are you doing? And then Brenda had this amazing ability, because we were very concerned when we were starting a family, because we'd seen so many ministers' kids that were really messed up. Because they would get their feelings hurt, because I know you guys won't believe this, but there are some people that give pastors a hard time and sometimes say some mean things, and you know, and kids hear that, you know. And so we had seen some, we'd gone to school with some kids that were pastors' kids that were kind of turned off the church because of their experiences from what their parents had with the church. So Brenda had this wonderful ability that whenever somebody did something good at church for us, she made sure the kids know. She goes, look at what they did. Look at how much they love us. She wanted to make sure that they knew that the church was a great place to be. How are you teaching your children to love the Lord with all your hearts? Let me tell you, if you're constantly talking about the church, that's how your kids are going to feel about the church. You know, if you're not in love with Jesus, they're not going to be in love with Jesus. Edward Duke of Windsor said this about America: the thing that impresses me most about America is the way parents obey their children. The way parents obey their children. Are you leading your home? How do you lead? Intentionally. Our children were all involved in sports. We had three boys in 4 years, and in Florida, baseball and basketball overlapped. And so we had boys in three different basketball leagues. We had two in the major leagues and little league, and one in the minors. And I remember one particular week, we had 8 baseball practices, 6 basketball practices, and 3 games. We grew up and grew out on hot dogs for several years. But our boys were always at church. They even went to Saturday morning children's choir that they absolutely hated, but they were there, you know. They were there on Wednesday nights for youth. There were a few times there were games that they had to miss, but most of the time they were there. We learned about our priorities from our parents. I learned the priority of church from my mother. My dad was not involved in church much until later in life, but I learned from Mom. And when I was a freshman in high school, I wanted to play football. I'd never played football in my life. I thought, I want to go out for football. And I was 6'1", weighed 150 pounds. But I was running second team, defensive end, and offensive guard, which that tells you how bad our football team was. But we had International Youth Convention that year, and I was the president of the youth group. And so I talked to the coach, and I said, look, I'm going to be a week late for fall practice, because they started practice the 1st of August. And he said, sure, that's no problem. You know, just get there when you get there. Well, he got fired, and they hired a new coach. And he said, if you're not there opening your practice, you won't play. You won't be on the team. So I had to make a decision about my commitment, and my commitment was to our youth group, because I had committed that I was going to be with them. And I went to the youth convention. I didn't get to play football, and I watched the guy behind me start most of the year. But I was never sorry about that, because I learned to value what my mother valued, to love the Lord your God with all your heart. She got his love inside of me. The teaching of my mother and the teaching of my youth pastors and the teaching of my pastors helped me during my dating years, kept my head straight to do the next right thing. We are not to be child-centered parents. We're called to be God-centered parents. Lead your children. Lead your children. Lead your children. Those verses in Deuteronomy talk about wearing them on your hands and on your forehead and inscribing them on the doorpost. That sounds a little weird to us, but the pious Jews had what they called a tefillin, which was a little box that they either wore on their forehead or their upper arm. And inside that box were certain scriptures that reminded them that God was the most important thing in their lives. And on the doorpost of a pious Jew, inside there was a hole drilled and there was a scroll. And you would touch the scroll as you left the house. It was called a mezuzah. And every pious Jew, every time they left the house, would pray, God, guide me. Am I going out? Am I coming back? It's a good prayer for all of us. We're to teach our children the importance of faith in all things. As parents, we often would write our tithe check in front of our children because we wanted to teach them generosity. John Calipari, you got to have a Kentucky story in Indiana. John Calipari, the coach of the University of Kentucky basketball team, has put 30 guys in the NBA since he's been there in 10 years. Those 30 guys with their contracts now amount to $1 billion a year when you put all their contracts together. It's crazy. And John gives the boys financial advice because most of them come from poverty backgrounds. And he talks to them about how you use your money, and then he talks about how you give your money. And he has a couple of foundations that he does. Last year, three of the players, when they signed their new contract, each gave $1 million to various charities. How'd they learn that? Somebody taught them about generosity. I want you to know that Monroe City Church of God is here to assist you as parents. We want our children, our youth, to learn about Jesus when they step foot on this campus. We're very serious. We're very committed to that partnership. But quite honestly, it's not our job. It's your job as parents. You'll be successful not if you expose your children to basketball or ballet or volleyball, and all those things are great. I love those things. Maybe not the ballet part, but I love most of that stuff. But if you expose your children to the great truths of God and teach them about His power and teach them about His forgiveness and His goodness and teach them that He will guide and direct their lives all the days of their lives, that will be the greatest gift that you will ever give your children. We want to transfer dependence from us to dependence on Him. Craig Rochelle shares a wonderful story about his little 5-year-old boy. And he asked Sam, he goes, Sam, what do you want to do when you grow up? And Sam was quiet for a moment, and he goes, I want to do what you do. He said, oh, you want to be a pastor? He said, no, I want to be a daddy. He goes, why do you want to be a daddy? Because daddies love Jesus, daddies love their mommies, and daddies love me. Wow. That's somebody who has instilled Jesus into the life of his child and taught by example what it means to love Jesus with all your heart. There's no higher compliment than any of us could ever be paid than that. 15 years ago, I had an associate named Austin. He was our youth pastor, and he was kind of new, and he's kind of lonely. He was a single guy. And so I thought, well, I'll introduce him to Ashley. She was a gal that was in college at the time. They were about as opposite as you could possibly be. Austin works on cars and does all kinds of crazy stuff. And Ashley sang in a gospel trio with her parents. And, she was just this very sweet, kind girl. Never thinking, I just thought she would, introduce you to some people. They fell in love. And they got married. And for 10 years, they tried to have children, and to no avail. They planted a church in Wichita, Kansas, and there was an emptiness especially in Ashley's heart, and they desperately wanted children. And 5 years ago, she was speaking to a group of women in Kentucky at a convention, and she shared her story of infertility and her trust and her faith in God. And there was a woman there whose daughter was pregnant, and she was not married. And she went home and told her about Austin and Ashley. And she looked them up online and kind of researched them on Facebook. And she goes, I want them to parent my baby. And so a few months later, she delivered a child, and they took the baby straight to the next room where Austin and Ashley welcomed their son, Miles. I love that story because Miles will have two parents who love Jesus with all their hearts, and they will impress on his heart the same love for Jesus. I call that God's amazing grace. So parents, the most important thing you will ever do is love Jesus with all your heart and to lead your children to get Jesus inside of them. Would you pray with me? Dear Father, I ask right now